This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Beat me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, DA, I'm thirsty, man. Can you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, DA, what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
DA, what's the silly? Oh, permission to get in that mothership.
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, DA? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Man, I'm feeling great.
I'm doing great.
Happy Monday to you, boys and girls. One question only. How do you feel?
Well, I feel good and I'm doing well.
Hey, that's all that really matters. And we come to you live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios. When you need certainty in the home buying process with a loan that fits your life, Rocket can. We appreciate you being with us on a Monday here on the show. We are going wire to wire, breaking down everything from week three of the NFL. Also, we have our NBA Finals matchup. It is LeBron versus his former team, the Miami Heat, Lakers and Heat, after the Heat closed things out last night over the Celtics. Also, a crazy weekend of the college football world. We just talked about Mike Leach and the air raid in its first game in Mississippi State, setting the all-time single-game passing record. First week with KJ Costello and Mike Leach manning the Bulldogs. So all of that is on the table if you want to weigh in. Also coming up in 20 minutes, what has happened to Carson Wentz and the Eagles? And in 40 minutes, advanced analytics. We are one step closer to Mraz losing the bet of the year, and we're not even into October yet. Remember, the bet was Mraz believed the New England Patriots would be a bottom three team of the NFL this year, would be picking in the top three of the draft. I said, there's no way that's going to happen. Well, I think I'm coasting to a victory already. They're 2-1. The Patriots certainly don't look like one of the three worst teams in football. There's an 0-3 Jets team, oh, an 0-3 Giants team, an 0-3 Vikings team, an 0-3 Texans team, an 0-2-1 Eagles team, an 0-3 Bengals team. Oh, there's a lot of bad squads, so I can pretty much guarantee that I'm going to win this bet, which means Mraz is going to have to don an American Patriot uniform. Think of him like a chunky Paul Revere. And reading a script off of a piece of parchment that I write, as I or somebody that I employ throws dodgeballs at him from 15 feet away. And if he's really bad at this, if the Patriots aren't picking in the top 10, I get to also pour hot New England clam chowder over his head. So we have that to look forward to. So we're asking you guys today on the poll question, did you before the season agree with Mraz and think that the Patriots would be a bottom three team in the NFL? Vote at CBS Sports Radio on Twitter, at CBS Sports Radio. Rock the vote. Let's begin this hour with the Houston Texans and EGADS. That Houston team came into the season with playoff expectations, a young quarterback still ascending, a head coach that thought they were good enough to survive trading away DeAndre Hopkins. They had given the offensive line of Laramie Tunsil a lot of money. This was supposed to be a team that would compete for AFC supremacy, and instead, they are winless going into October. brutal. Absolutely brutal for this Texans team. And I have to say that I believe Houston's season is over. I think that's it. In that division, with the Tennessee Titans at 3-0, and a Colts team at 2-1 and seemingly finding their way a little bit here, a blowout win over the Jets yesterday, you ain't going to back your way into an 8-8 division win here. It's not that AFC South anymore. And this Texans team offensively has been truly ugly. In the opener against the Chiefs, they did nothing. In week two against the Ravens, they did nothing. And then yesterday, they actually took a lead early and couldn't hold on to it because the second half defense of the Steelers completely shut them down. And maybe this will force Bill O'Brien to question whether he's really the genius that he thinks that he is. But in the second half of that game, the Texans were shut out. They scored all 21 points of the first half. And the Steelers ended up with a 28-21 win. And if you watch the second half, you just saw that the Texans couldn't do anything. They could not move the football at all after halftime. And specifically the fourth quarter when they needed to run the football. Here are the possessions of the Houston Texans in the second half of yesterday's game. Again, they led going into halftime. Three plays, 6 yards. Punt. Three plays, negative 7 yards, punt. Eight plays, 42 yards, interception. Three plays, no yards, punt. That was the Texans' offense in the second half of yesterday's game. Three 3-and-outs and one interception. Now, Bill O'Brien has built a team that's supposed to support Deshaun Watson. An offensive line, running game, and wide receivers. Instead of DeAndre Hopkins, who he deemed to be too expensive, he brought in a lot of smaller, speedy wide receivers. He has Brandon Cooks, and he's got Will Fuller, and he's got Kenny Stills, a series of smallish but speedy wide receivers. And he spent a lot of money on Laremy Tunsil, traded a lot of draft collateral for him. And so this was all supposed to be in helping out Deshaun Watson. Of course, traded for David Johnson as well in that ill-fated DeAndre Hopkins trade. And what do you have here? David Johnson averaging less than 2 yards per carry yesterday. The Texans ran for a total of 30 yards yesterday. And I don't know about you, but I don't see any wide receiver on that field for the Texans that's even close to the security blanket that DeAndre Hopkins was. When push came to shove in the second half, the Steelers made adjustments, the Steelers were able to stop them, and the offense behind Deshaun Watson had 3 3-and-outs and a pick in the second half. That's 0-3, that's season over, and that once again makes me scratch my head and ask, why again does Bill O'Brien seem to have a lifetime job security in Houston? Whereas the problem is not that the Texans have lost to the Chiefs, Ravens, and Steelers. If they were 13-3 this year and those were their three losses, we could all understand. The problem is if you're 0-2, you've got to find a way to win yesterday's game. At 0-3, you've had to find a way to at least win one of these first three. And the offense has been the problem all 3 weeks.
Yeah, and at some point, DA, is it too much to ask Deshaun Watson to rise above the malpractices that Bill O'Brien has put him in, whether it's terrible game management or terrible roster decisions like getting rid of DeAndre Hopkins? Because we have all thrown a lot, and maybe some of it deserving and probably a lot of it not, a lot of bouquets at the feet of Deshaun Watson in trying to put him in the stratosphere that is Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson. And with every week that passes, and I know their defense has been bad, and I know again that he lost DeAndre Hopkins, every week that passes watching the Texans way more than I should be, Deshaun Watson, the one thing he had at Clemson was that it factor. And it just feels like he's missing a little bit of that it factor when the going gets tough in some of these games. And it almost feels like some of his throws get a little more lackadaisical, maybe a little, overwhelming for him at times. I don't know, D.A. I think Bill O'Brien is the biggest, obviously, culprit and problem with the Houston Texans. But if Deshaun Watson is going to be this elite top five quarterback that he's getting paid to be and that we have already tried to put him on the pedestal of being, isn't it time for him to rise above all the challenges that are put in front of him here?
Well, I think that it's time for him to have found a way to win one of these games. And at the very least, if he's going to lose in a shootout. And that hasn't happened. And I realize it takes some time to develop a relationship with your new wide receivers. And I realize that when you had DeAndre Hopkins there, he was your all-out bailout every time, and now you don't have him. And you went against three teams without a preseason that are pretty steady in what they do. So you're learning, and maybe they're not. But a really good team finds a way to avoid 0-3. And a really great quarterback finds a way against one of these three teams, if not two or three of the three teams, to, yes, elevate the play of his squad, elevate the play of his offense. And I love Deshaun Watson. You know, I think we're poised for a multiple Pro Bowl type of career and a potential Hall of Fame career. I think that much of Deshaun Watson. I think he's incredibly good at running, at throwing, at leading, at doing a lot of things. But this start to the year is a disaster for them. And I think Bill O'Brien and Deshaun Watson, you might worry that we're going to be 7 years into Deshaun Watson's career and that Bill O'Brien would have held him back. That Bill O'Brien would have never truly done the right things to support him. Because Bill O'Brien has all the control now in that front office. He's got all of the control. And he can't be fired, basically, because apparently, you know, he employs himself and ownership is scared of him or whatever. Yeah. So, I don't know. It feels a little bit like the Mike McCarthy thing where we're going to look back and say, boy, you know, it would have been better if Rodgers didn't have 12 years under him, that long under him. But at least they got a championship out of it. Right. I mean, you could have Bill O'Brien and Deshaun Watson tied to the hip and them never even get to an AFC championship game, but they could be together for a decade.
It's a disaster. And honestly, I think the idea that the AFC South was so bad for so long, it gave ownership in Houston false, I don't know, bravado around Bill O'Brien to think they'd really found the guy. I mean, to watch Bill O'Brien coach games just because he was getting you home wild card playoff games didn't mean you had to give up everything and give him full control, because it is completely setting the team back. And now you're seeing a division that the Titans seem to have found their way. You mentioned the Colts playing good. Jacksonville's still going to be lost. But the division is far harder to win now and more difficult to win now. And you should have the best quarterback far and away in the division, that should kind of even the playing field. And if you don't belong on the same field with the other AFC elite teams, well, then what the heck are we playing for in Houston? You playing just to be the seventh wild card and just happy that you keep getting playoff games? I think it's a complete problem, a complete disaster. I'm not ready to write off the Texans season yet, like you are at 0-3, because of the extra wild card. But I don't know. Deshaun Watson, you bring up Mike McCarthy and Rodgers, he's starting to feel a lot to me like Matt Stafford in Detroit.
Really good quarterback, but surrounded by a bunch of bozos for his entire career.
Exactly. Just around bozos, and then when all is said and done, you start to question how good he even is to begin with.
You know, for Bill O'Brien, it would have been one thing if the Houston Texans said, okay, we like you as a head coach, but we need to have a general manager above you, and that's the way our power structure is going to be. We don't need you to also do personnel. I could get behind that, but what we've seen is that Bill O'Brien's personnel decisions are a disaster. What general manager makes the huge trade for Laremy Tunsil, trades away DeAndre Hopkins, tries to assemble a wide receiving core that's clearly not working very well, does the whole song and dance with Jadeveon Clowney 2 years ago, and now is trying to figure out a running attack with a guy, David Johnson, that nobody else in the NFL wanted? All of it seems wrong. All of it. And he employs himself. So it's just maddening in Houston. And I mean, Ross Tucker said he thought he'd be 7-9. They'd be 7-9 or 8-8. Well, I don't think 7-9 or 8-8 are going to get a wild card spot. So they haven't played the Titans twice. They haven't played the Colts. You really think that they're going to get to 10-6 this year at 0-3 and try to make a playoff push?
Maybe
9-7 minimum you would have to be.
I don't have the schedule in front of me, but I went through this last week looking at it, and even with a loss to the Steelers, it feels like their schedule, even if they split with the Titans, is very favorable to a 10-3 type of run. But that being said, I'm also basing that off of the Texans we saw the last couple years that felt like they belonged. This just feels like a completely different Texan team because of no DeAndre Hopkins. You realize, if you didn't appreciate DeAndre Hopkins before, the offense is completely stuck in mud without him. There's nobody taking a safety deep. There's nobody that, as you pointed out, basically you could bail out on a third down and just get it up to Hopkins, and chances are he's going to make a play. It is a completely different offense and a completely different team with DeAndre Hopkins, and I'm not so sure I could trust my feelings on the Texans that I had the past couple of years, where I didn't think they were great anyway, but they should find a way to win a lot of games. Again, I don't think the season's over yet. It's close to being over because of the seventh wild card, but I don't know that they could go on a 10-3 run now when you think of the way the offense looks.
If you're trading away DeAndre Hopkins, two things have to then come to fruition. You have to have Deshaun Watson able to connect with his new wide receiving core, and your offensive line has got to be able to block him well, and neither one of those things has happened for the Texans. On Mondays, we do a salute to our little friend, Little Mo. It's time for Momentous Monday.
Smiling like Little Mo every morning. It's a Momentous Monday.
Hey, every day can be a better day despite the challenge. All you gotta do is leave it better than you found it. It's gonna get difficult to stand, but hold your balance. I just say whatever, cause there is no way you're found it.
I just think people should know that if you stay positive, everything will be fine, and nothing bad is going to happen if you think positive and just think positive, stay positive, and eat, well, eat, breathe, and just eat, drink, and breathe positive thoughts. That's all you got to do, and everything will be good.
Little Mo teaches us every single day about smiling, staying positive, overcoming adversities. And how about Washington High School quarterback Trayshawn Willis? This is one of the coolest sports stories I have seen in a long time. This high school is in Iowa. Trayshawn Willis is their quarterback. He scored 6 touchdowns, 3 passing, 3 rushing, to lead his Demons to a 41-27 victory over the Mount Pleasant Panthers last Friday night. Now, he also learned how to dunk a basketball in 8th grade. So, Trayshawn Willis is an amazing athlete. Dare I mention he's got one arm. Yep, Trayshawn Willis is a quarterback for his high school football team. Scored 6 touchdowns last Friday night. Has taught himself how to dunk a basketball. And has one arm. He has taught himself how to play quarterback, throwing the football, carrying the football with one arm. He's an amazing, amazing young man. The video clips are all over YouTube and social media as well, so you got to check him out. He is incredible. He has announced that he has got his first college football offer from Loras College in Iowa. So that's pretty badass that he'll be able to continue playing high school football after his high school career. But how amazing is that? We have the story that we were talking about Jim Abbott a couple of weeks ago, because he was one of my feel-good moment, good mojo posts on social media. And we were just marveling at the type of career that he had with one hand. Here is a young man in Trayshawn Willis, who is a star quarterback in Iowa with one arm. Just amazing. Props to Trayshawn Willis, and props to all of everybody out there that is battling through adversity, and those of us that inspire the rest. We love you. We appreciate you. We'd like to honor you here on the DA Show every single Monday in honor of our friend Little Mo. A Momentous Monday. When we come back here on the show, Carson Wentz and the Eagles. What has happened in Philadelphia? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Laugh and learn every morning aboard the mothership.
The only thing that can save them is an interception and a return for a touchdown. Instead, they hand the football off, and the final tackle is made on Joe Mixon, and that is it. The game is over, and it's a tie. Are you thrilled? I'm not. I'm close to disgusted.
Even with our drive offensively, a couple times we felt like we were in field goal range. We had plays, and then we had penalties, and things just kept backing us up. So the fight was there. The effort was there from guys. We just got to be smarter, play cleaner. I got to be better as well. And, it was a frustrating way to end the game for sure.
Oh, that was Merrill Reese on Eagles Radio. Quote, I'm close to disgusted. After a tie. Download the Home Depot mobile app today to get started on DIY projects and locate all your bath, carpet, and appliance solutions in one place. The Home Depot, how doers get more done. That, of course, with Carson Wentz after the tie, which felt a lot like a loss. I don't know. I don't know what it is and what's going on in Philadelphia, but there's a couple of things that are really terrifying. Number one. You're 0-2. You come back home. You have the Bengals in your house. I know there's no fans there, but this is a no-brainer, close your eyes, roll to a victory type of day. That is just it. If you were a playoff competitive team, 0-2, desperation mode, Bengals coming into town. This is your get healthy, 26-10. We're done here. Game is over in the third quarter, and we just drive home safely. The fact that this gets to overtime, and the fact that Carson Wentz has to pull a rabbit out of his keister just to tie the game and send it to overtime as they're down 7 in the waning moments, and Wentz has to scramble and dive for the end zone is terrifying. That they needed a miracle to even get this to OT. Also, they're in overtime. They cannot move the football. Neither team can score an OT. Again, a debacle that the Eagles cannot even score a field goal in overtime to win this thing. And instead of on 4th-and-12 going for it or allowing their kicker to line up for a 63-yard field goal attempt to try to win it, Doug Peterson decided to punt. Playing for the tie against the Bengals at home. Again, horrifying. And we just had Ross Tucker join us on the show. He has been very close to the Eagles organization for a while, does a lot of work in Philadelphia. And he says it's mental. And I don't see how it could be anything else. Right now, Carson Wentz is a puddle. Right now, Carson Wentz is just melting every week. Right now, Carson Wentz has absolutely no confidence. He's throwing turnovers. He's not moving the ball. He's not scoring touchdowns. And they're 0-2-1, which feels like 0-3. And I think that this dates back to the Super Bowl year, where it was soaring right along, and he was the MVP candidate, and then it was all ruptured because he got injured. Foles goes on the miraculous run, and he is watching his team and teammate play out his Super Bowl dream in real time, and he's not part of it. And then they decide to go away from Foles and to bank on Wentz to give him all the money, and so now there's huge pressure to not only redo what Foles did, which might just be a moment in time for the Eagles. Remember, that was their first Super Bowl win ever, so maybe that's their only Super Bowl win ever, but now he is entrusted to do the exact same thing that Foles just did because, well, the coach is the same, and the team is the same, and your situation is the same, and you're actually better than Nick Foles, right? And he's succumbing to that pressure. There's also a statue of Nick Foles and Doug Peterson outside that facility that he walks by every single day. And then just to add some more pressure onto a town that is filled with pressure, they draft Jalen Hurts as a quarterback in the second round behind you, and they've activated him. He's not handling any of this well. None of this is being handled well by Carson Wentz. And Doug Peterson can make excuse after excuse after excuse for him. He's run out of excuses. Yesterday, the bit was, I don't trust my quarterback to gain the 12 yards, but I trust their quarterback to gain the 12 yards that will put them in position to get the field goal if we miss this field goal, where we don't get the first down. And I can't risk that. I'll play for the tie. Woof. P.U. Hold your nose as you walk by Lincoln Financial Field. That was a stinker. Standing by with our headlines this morning is dessert coordinator Brad Heller, which after a few more headlines, he can dive into some early dessert. Brad, good morning.
Oh, I am ready, D.A. Good morning. This report is sponsored by Geico. Geico has introduced the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers that lasts your full policy term. Visit .com/giveback for info and eligibility. The Sunday night game, Aaron Rodgers, 3 touchdown passes, and the Packers win a shootout with the Saints in New Orleans, 37-30.
Anytime you're playing, a Drew Brees team, you got to score. He's such a dynamic player. You know, the two times we've played here before, felt like they put up 50 both times. I know they put up 52 in one of them. So we knew the type of game. You know, they got a lot of playmakers, and Drew obviously knows how to deal the ball.
And Brees also had 3 touchdown passes. Green Bay is 3-0. New Orleans drops to 1-2. Also 3-0, the Seahawks. They beat the Cowboys in Seattle 38-31. 5 more touchdown passes for Russell Wilson. He is the first in NFL history to throw 14 TD passes in his first 3 games. But Seattle losing Jamal Adams to a strained groin. Chris Carson also left with a knee injury. The Bills are 3-0. They beat the Rams 35-32 despite blowing all of a 28-3 lead. Josh Allen led them back late in the fourth quarter. The game-winning touchdown pass to Tyler Kroft with 15 seconds to go. Allen, 4 touchdown passes and a touchdown run. The Bears are 3-0. They beat the Falcons 30-26 on the road. Nick Foles coming off the bench, replacing Mitchell Trubisky. He threw 3 fourth-quarter touchdown passes. Here's Coach Matt Nagy on the making the change.
The quarterback situation, you know, it can be, there's a lot of emotions that go into that. These kids, these players. And so that was a move that we ended up making. But we're super fired up that we won the game.
And the Falcons, meanwhile, are 0-3. They're the first team in NFL history to lose back-to-back games while blowing 15 or more point leads in the fourth quarter in both games. Also 0-3, the Texans, as they fell to the Steelers 28-21, although Bill O'Brien's not freaking out yet.
We haven't played anybody in the division yet. There's a lot of football left. It's not where you want to be, but we have a really, you know, veteran team in many aspects, and so I don't think anybody's panicking, but, you know, everybody knows that 0-3 is not where we want to be.
The Steelers are 3-0 for the first time in 10 years. The Titans 3-0 for the first time in 12 years. They edge the Vikings 31-30. Minnesota is 0-3. The Patriots beat the Raiders 36-20. Bucks over the Broncos 28-10 as Tom Brady threw 3 touchdown passes. The Browns beat Washington 34-20. Cleveland over 500 for the first time since 2014. And maybe the game of the season, maybe the game of the entire season coming up tonight. The Chiefs and the Ravens will face off in Baltimore. The Heat are going to the NBA Finals. They knocked out the Celtics in Game 6, 125-113. Bam Adebayo, a season-high 32 points, while the Celtics and Brad Stevens losing in the Eastern Conference Finals for the third time in 4 years.
It's more of a credit to them. It's nothing against our guys at all. They gave it everything they had. And, you know, again, I think Miami's been great. And we just, for whatever reason, and it was really a myriad of reasons, if you look at the 4 or 5 close games, we just couldn't solve them late.
Game 1, Heat and Lakers will be on Wednesday. The baseball playoffs start tomorrow. The American League side, Rays and Blue Jays, A's White Sox, Twins Astros, Indians Yankees. Those are all best of 3. National League side starts Wednesday. Dodgers and the Brewers, who got in thanks to losses by the Phillies and Giants. Braves and Reds, that's the 2-7 matchup. Cubs, Marlins, the 3-6. Padres and Cardinals in the 4-5. D.A.,
thank you, Brad. Mraz, what do you think is ultimately the biggest problem right now with Carson Wentz?
The mental part that Ross Tucker talked about might be there, but I just don't think he's ever been fully recovered health-wise, and I think the injuries have really just taken a toll, whether it's the ACL or obviously any shots to the head that he took last year. It could be a combination of not wanting to get hurt, while also the body is just not the same body it was 4 years ago. But I think those, the health and injuries that mounted for Carson Wentz, to me, 1 + 1 has to equal 2. And somewhere along the line, that is a factor in why he's no longer an MVP type quarterback and is now borderline awful.
Can he save it?
It's hard to say that Carson Wentz, you throw everything out the window and he's completely toast, right? I mean, that's a high pressure situation in Philadelphia. I think to me, personally, there is obviously cause for concern for both, but I would actually venture to say that Doug Peterson is a bigger concern than Carson Wentz right now in Philadelphia. Because Doug Peterson, his first year and went on that Super Bowl run after that, the second year, everything was about he was kind of ahead of the curve on being a gambler, risking it, going for it. And I don't know, it just seems like there's a collection on this team where everything that Doug Peterson used to touch and turn to gold, he's just not doing it anymore. And things like yesterday, not gambling, is just compounding that situation. The aggressiveness is worn off. I don't want to use this word because I'm not inside that locker room, but it almost feels like Doug Peterson, since winning the Super Bowl, has gotten lazier as being a head coach, if that makes any sense. He ran out and, like you said, wrote the book tour and wrote the book. At least there's a offensive line injuries that you can kind of look at with Carson Wentz and not trusting all of that. But Doug Peterson is supposed to be a quarterback guy. I don't think he's putting Carson Wentz in a position to succeed and is relying too much on Carson Wentz just to kind of do his own thing. So I think Wentz can be saved, not necessarily that he would be saved, but it may not be Peterson that needs to do the saving. And I just wonder how much of a contract as far as avoiding being fired Doug Peterson earned by winning the only Super Bowl for the Eagles, because I think he is actually the biggest problem in Philadelphia right now.
I think that both of these guys, Wentz and Peterson, both have confidence issues because of the way that Doug Peterson's coaching. Yesterday, slamming their head up against the Cincinnati Bengals at home, being unable to break through and win that football game and giving up late for the tie. And drafting Jalen Hurts is a sign, no matter what they tell you, that they don't have complete confidence in Carson Wentz. There is no way you draft Jalen Hurts without some worry that you can't win with Carson Wentz alone. They can doll it up and say, well, he's a weapon, he's an X factor, he's an H-back, he's this, he's that, he's Taysom Hill. But what that does, it puts a different quarterback on the field than Carson Wentz, that you just can't win with just Wentz. And they're suffering from a crisis in confidence in the front office that's happening, maybe because of the injuries, as you said, maybe because upstairs Wentz is not all there, but because they are, it's leading to Wentz doing it, and it's a vicious cycle. I don't think Carson Wentz can succeed in Philly. I agree. I would not throw his career out right now and say he'll never get it done. There was a lot to like about Carson Wentz in his first 2-3 seasons in the league. A lot. But since the Super Bowl win by Foles, it's been a never-ending stream of questionable reports around Wentz, his leadership style, locking on to one receiver like Zach Ertz, wanting to win some type of respect within the city or within the locker room. It's been an uphill battle for him. And when they drafted Jalen Hurts in April, it told us that the staff as well worries about being able to win with only Carson Wentz. I don't think he'll dig out of this in Philly. I think he needs a fresh start somewhere else. And I think we're going to see a season where Philly, at times, is going to look really ugly. And the thing that's going to keep them in this is the division. I mean, the Cowboys are lucky to be 1-2, and that's good enough to lead the division right now. The Eagles will probably still be in it because the division might be 1-9-7. But there's going to be a lot of ugly times, and I don't think Wentz ever truly succeeds in Philadelphia. There's just too much water underneath that bridge right now. When we come back on the show, we've got your advanced analytics. Did you have a feeling that the Patriots would be this much better than the preseason prognostications? DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Analytics is just a term that's kind of thrown around a lot.
It's time now for the mothership's advanced analytics.
Well, the calendar hasn't even turned to October, and we're already delighted by images of Mraz having chowder dumped on his head. Because with the Patriots at 2-1 and a relatively easy win over the Raiders yesterday, it seems relatively impossible that they would finish the season with a bottom 3 record of the NFL, which Mraz claimed, which caused this bet, which means I'll win easily. And so before the NFL season, did you think the Patriots would have a bottom three record of the league? I can't believe 22% of you admitted yes. 78% said no. So 8 out of 10 people said no way Mraz is a bozo here. I can't believe 2 out of 10 said I agree with him. But 78% said no. Mraz said that he would be dressed up like Ben Revere. Well, Ben Revere played 8 seasons in Major League Baseball, 3 with the Twins, 3 with the Phillies, 1 with the Nats and the Angels. Ben Revere, Advanced Analytics tells us, hit 7 home runs with a .284 batting average. Paul Revere, a Revolutionary War hero, on the evening of April the 18th, 1775, rode his famous horse, Brown Beauty, alerting American troops to the advancing British force. That is your advanced analytics.
Went deep there.
Today is once again about the education of America, namely Mraz. And we're teaching him new things like Ben Revere wasn't a person, Paul Revere was. But we also laid Mraz on the mothership couch. And occasionally, every few months, we have to do this. Over the course of 18 years, I feel like we've made some strides. And Mraz, understanding where he came from and the choices along the way, how they were connected to other things that happened to him. I think maybe before he started the show, he did not connect the dots. And now I think that he does much more so. And he had unveiled a story 2 years ago, which we replayed on this date of mothership history, which really spoke a lot about where he found himself. And this was back when he was 7 or 8 years old in art class. He was really into art, really, really into art. And did some type of drawing or painting. Do you remember which it was?
I believe it was paint. And it was one of the first experiences I had with a paintbrush. And I remember my teacher just awarding me that I was the best with a paintbrush in the class. So it was I believe it was like a flower pot with flowers. And don't get me wrong, it was one of those like where the little numbers were in it and kind of outlined to follow there. It wasn't like I was just on
so it was a paint by number.
I'm pretty sure it was a paint by number. Remember, you're just starting out at this point, you know, you're young. This has to be 93, 94, right after Joe Carter hits the homer, you're out there, and I'm painting. And I was excited because D.A., you know me. How many times have I told you, if I do a good job, you know, give me a cookie or something? And this all stems from that. The teacher, you know, in front of the whole class, what a great job Sean did. Look, this is the kind of model we need to be following. And as a kid, don't you bring that home to mom and dad and just, Mom, look, you're raising something here. You got something cooking here with me.
Got something cooking. So Mraz is so proud of this water pot, this flower pot, rather. And he's in the car on the way home from school, and his mom gets into a fender bender. And she gets out of the car to exchange information with the opposing driver, with the other driver, and she needs a piece of paper to write the information on, and she grabs Mraz's flower pot picture, tears it in half, and writes on the back of it the information. Oh. And Mraz is crying. He is beside himself. He was so proud of this. And Nancy just says, get over it. There are bigger fish to fry than your ugly picture.
She said that in not so many words, but basically you got the point.
At this point, Mraz goes in the tank in art. He had, to that point in time, been enlivened and inspired. And he then, it all goes away. The love, the passion goes away. He goes into the tank. And I wonder if this is not one of the early signals to him that working hard at school is meaningless. Things that are connected at school, meaningless, because even though you might think they're cool or important, your parents don't. Ultimately, they don't hold any value. And I wonder if that starts to turn Mraz a little bit. Now, we learn that he actually was an honor student up until 7th grade or 8th grade. However, it's a little dicey whether that was a reputable honor in a school where the valedictorian is now a cash register.
Even the Browns get a Pro Bowler, D.A. Even the Browns get a Pro Bowler.
Mraz's school has put out a lot of bad students, so I don't know if being an honor roll student was all that much of an honor. But it led us to really dissecting today the trauma involved in this moment. It is your epic fail.
Even the DA show is not perfect. We know. Shocking. Here's the epic fail.
Kaplan, behind the scenes, is laughing that this is not trauma, but for you, you know that it is, correct?
Of course it is. That was a traumatic experience for me. Like, that is the only word to use. And I understand all these years later that it is funny if you can kind of get over it, but there's no doubt that it absolutely scarred me and had impressions on me that ruined part of what could have been my life. That's all I'll say. So
it's 100 years ago you're talking about.
I don't know where my life could have taken me if that moment didn't happen. I might have done something in an art field. I might have. I may not have, but I may have.
Also, that it was a pain.
And oh my, this has gone wild.
Do you think this was the first red flag that your parents, specifically your mom, would not prioritize your education or things that you did in school?
In hindsight, I would say yes.
Is Mraz going to survive?
I mean, how could you not think that? And I think what's more troubling, too, when we got so lost there, it's the doubling down, right? Because clearly I was hysterically crying. Clearly I was upset. And rather than be, like, consoled or talk to nicely about, hey, look, things happen in life. Sorry, this is a pinch. I didn't get a sorry. I got a deal with it. There's bigger things going on right now. It wasn't that great anyway. So basically, I was left to cry for like 6 days after that.
Thank goodness we have newspapers here. It's not to read. We might be reading an obituary at the end of this.
Because my mom was all in a tizzy, and she didn't comfort me the right way. You know, it's one thing. She threw a pick and then decided that we were going to get stomped at and blown out afterwards. It was bad.
Could you imagine the shoe on the other foot where you are driving Taylor around and she just did finger painting at preschool or something like that, and you take the finger painting and you tear it in half in front of Taylor and write on it? Would you ever do that?
No. I will not make the same mistake. I'll make my own mistakes, but I'm not going to make the same mistakes my parents made. There's no way.
My son won the tickets.
Absolutely not. I'd frame it.
Epic fail, you loser.
That is why you fail.
Epic fail.
Could you imagine tearing Taylor's art project in half in her face and telling her to get over it, Mraz?
No. That image actually crushes my heart, which now makes me, now that I'm a parent, I think about it. What the heck was my mom thinking? What was she thinking? What was going through her head? Like, you got into the accident. It was either you or the other driver's fault. It wasn't my fault. You don't have one napkin from McDonald's you could have ripped in half? There had to have been other things in the Gran Turismo, and I wish there was instant replay and we could go back to that now. I want Google Maps on that moment. There had to have been another piece of paper. Why was it my painting? Why? I would never do that to my child.
Our toll-free line. 855-212-4227. Call off right now about Mraz's trauma as a child. Did you know that right now Geico is offering an extra 15% credit car, motorcycle, RV policies on top of what Geico could already save you? What are you waiting for? Visit geico.com to learn more. And our Ask the Pros question of the day brought to you by O'Reilly Auto Parts. Thank O'Reilly for all of your car care needs. Get guaranteed low prices, excellent customer service at O'Reilly. Better parts, better prices every day. I love this question coming to us from Dan. D.A., where is Vogish today? Don't tell me he's gone. I love spelling Andrew Bogish's name with a V. Vogish, like Voltron. So now I'm going to call Bogish Vogish from now on. No, Andrew Vogish is only out today with Brad Heller being in, filling in for him. He is back tomorrow. I don't know why AV is out today.
Oh, I could tell you he pulled a Bilotti. He went on a vacation spot you don't vacation at after a certain point. He took the kids to the Jersey Shore again this weekend. I mean, DA, we're almost in October here. Wrap it up. This is a Bilotti move, going somewhere on the cheap that you don't go to after a certain time.
Take your days.
Vogish is back tomorrow here on the show. More wonderment. And we'll break down tonight's Chiefs and Ravens game. Should be fun Monday Night Football. Thanks to Sean Mraz, executive producer of the DA Show. We're also charging him $150 an hour for the therapy sessions. Thanks to Pete, the Body Bellotti of the Wheels of Steel, and the musical director. Thanks to Andrew Kaplan, the Wizard of Watch DA, and Brad Heller on your headlines. We'll see you tomorrow. The Mothership disconnects.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.